Tuesday, June 12th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, everyone has no doubt seen what's going on in North Korea, which is basically the story that has seemed to have been covered instead of basically everything else. And it's, in a lot of ways, it is very important, but it seems to be eclipsing a lot of other big things going on, especially all the other big globalist events going on around the world, which we've recently talked about, such as the G7 or the Shanghai Cooperation Summit or possibly Bilderberg or many other very important topics, some of which we'll get into today. But I felt it was important to cover what had happened because it is relevant in general. However, I've avoided covering every single step of the way, as many have, because it's a lot of speculation. And even still, what's going on right now is a lot of speculation. But it's important to be measured in this and understand that nothing is certain as of yet. It's still all basically hypotheticals, but I'm going to break down what's happened so far and give you a little insight on what's actually going on here. Now, essentially, after this summit that was recently held, by all accounts, it was very cordial and very positive. All these, a lot of flowery words being thrown around and positive thoughts for the future, which is great to see. Now, I want to start by pointing out that I think it's important to understand that seeing the way that Trump is responding here and the actions he's taking and the things we're about to get into, it is certainly worthy of some hopeful possibility here to think maybe Donald Trump is actually not the kind of Manchurian candidate that many try to say he is, that I've possibly said he was in the past, and more of a puppet, more of somebody who's being corralled and controlled by all the war hawks in his cabinet, unwitting to it all. So it's hopeful to see that he's slightly pulling away. I mean, I've always been one to say we should hope for the best while clearly expecting the worst. With everything we've seen so far, especially with all of his foreign policy and all of his reneged promises, I'm not very hopeful in that regard. But this is a positive step to see him do something like this if we see follow through. But that being said, essentially what was agreed to here is that that North Korea has essentially agreed to denuclearize their North Korea and the Korean Peninsula in general, and the U.S. has agreed to cease all war drills, which is something that all of the war hawks and the John Boltons of the world are very surprised about and obviously are not happy with. And it's something that many people are labeling as kind of a weakness of Donald Trump. But one thing that's very important to understand is that these drills never really accomplished anything other than a absurd show of force, which was the point of them. They clearly never stopped or influenced Kim's actions in any way other than possibly provoking more hostility. So stopping them are, in my eyes, a show of good faith and that really cost the United States nothing. But that's the opposite of what you're hearing from all of the propagandists out there who want everyone to see this as a weakness of Donald Trump and something that we should never do because North Korea is a dangerous regime that we shouldn't be dealing with. But in reality, the reality is much different, which I'll get into in a second. But first, they signed a non-binding pledge. That's important to understand. Of all the good talks and discussions and everything they said and did, what they signed was a non-binding pledge. So really nothing of consequence just yet, but it's a lot of good steps in the right direction. Now, what they agreed to was four things. One is the United States and North Korea commit to establish new U.S.-North Korea relations in accordance with the desire of the peoples of the two countries for peace and prosperity. Number two, the United States and North Korea will join their efforts to build a lasting and stable peace regime on the Korean Peninsula. I thought that was weird, a stable peace regime. There is another meaning for the word regime, but it's typically something that is associated with an authoritarian nature. It's odd to think of a peace regime. Anyway, number three, reaffirming the April 27, 2018 declaration, North Korea commits to work toward complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Number four, the United States and North Korea commit to recovering POW MIA remains, including the immediate reparation of those already identified. So that's what they essentially signed, a non-binding pledge and agreement, which interestingly enough, nowhere does that mention anything about ceasing the war drills. Now, as I said, it's non-binding, but interesting that seems like one of the most primary points for North Korea, and yet it wasn't involved. It wasn't listed there. I found that interesting. Now, many are clearly pointing that this agreement looks a lot like the agreements of the past between the United States and North Korea, which they claim North Korea reneged on, which is false. The denuclearization agreements to which North Korea had agreed in 1994, again in 2005 and 2007, failed primarily because of the reluctance of the Clinton and Bush administrations to commit to entering into a normal political and economic relationship with North Korea, which is entirely the point. Geopolitical control in the area, primarily as a foothold in regard to China and U.S. hegemony in general, which is why many are cautioning limited optimism here, as the U.S. will likely fall back into old patterns of broken agreements and strong-arming via military power. But you will likely hear the exact opposite from mainstream media, spinning a different yarn about Kim, the maniac trickster who has never held to an agreement, which has no basis in reality, as little of their content ever does, and ensuring Americans are ever the mindless servants of the military-industrial complex. Peace is not good if you are in the war business, as we can see with the military-industrial complex stocks crashing after Trump simply meets with Kim Jong-un. I think that's a very important thing to reflect on, how that happens. And clearly there's an effort to make sure that these kind of war situations continue. But it's, you have to understand here in general that the way that they're painting this as North Korea being the one that will essentially, rather that they never have and will continue to fall through on these agreements is just simply not true. And the history of this shows you that the U.S. has made sure they did not continue in good faith to create these normal political and economic relationships for many different reasons, and that gives North Korea absolutely no reason to move forward in good faith as well. That's important to understand. Now, it's also important to understand that Kim Jong-un has wanted this path and has used his development of nukes to get to the table for a deal. It is now and has always been on the U.S. to actually take steps in the right direction. Its warmongering past and its present show why this is needed. If North Korea did not have the ability to negotiate from a relative position of strength today, we would be seeing a much different and more violent and surreptitious outcome. Also important to understand. But as I said, I think it's important to reflect on the possibility that this kind of a move, which is very clearly the opposite of basically everything John Bolton has put forward, as well as Mike Pompeo, it's important to consider the possibility that Donald Trump may, in a way, be kind of awakening to the fact that he's being corralled and manipulated. I mean, that's at least my hope, because it gives us a glimmer of hope for the possibility that he's not just yet another puppet in a long line of puppets, or rather a puppet, but is realizing he's a puppet, and would give us possibly a step in the right direction and maybe a little bit of control of what's actually going on. But again, I'm not extremely hopeful in that regard, but it, you know, unless this is some kind of a long con move, it seems like he's going against what benefits the neocons and the war machine. So it's an interesting step here. But again, it all comes back to whether or not this actually is seen to fruition and we actually see something take place. They just always seem to find a way to come up with some kind of a reason, just like we saw Trump pull out of the summit in the first place, based on their own actions and his reaction to their actions, pulls out of the agreement, making it seem like the fault of North Korea. So it would be very easy to see John Bolton and these people behind him concoct some kind of a reason to make Donald Trump feel like he has to pull out to save face. So we'll have to wait and see what happens, but you know, cautious optimism here, but I'm not too hopeful based on our own history, even recent history, that this is going to be going any other direction than continuing to see war in the area. But we can be hopeful. Moving on to the next story coming from theantimedia.com, U.S. airstrikes kill 18 civilians in northeast Syria. As U.S. and Kurdish forces carried out offensives against ISIS in the area, U.S. warplanes carried out airstrikes against the town of Kobara, if I'm saying that correctly, in the mostly Kurdish Hasake province of northeast Syria, killing 18 civilians. Details are still emerging on the incident, which the Syrian government has confirmed. The majority of the slain civilians are, by their accounts, Iraqi refugees who had fled into Syria during the fighting in western Iraq, which I find incredibly ironic and just horrifying to realize that they're fleeing from the war created due to the U.S. occupation in Iraq into an area in Syria thinking they're going to be safe and fall victim to the very same warmongering of the U.S.-led coalition in Syria. It's just frustrating to see how these innocent civilians are running around fleeing from their homes to get away from this kind of situation, just to run right into the next one created by the very same people. It's just frustrating. And now we just recently talked about how these bombings are very inaccurate. And these things are happening all over the place. I'm clearly feigning to be fighting against ISIS, but it never seems to really be the case. And civilians seem to be taking the brunt of this kind of action. This is a common occurrence on both sides of the border, as it's ISIS-controlled territory straddling the Iraq-Syria border, and offenses against each side tended to send civilians scattering to any place remotely safer than where they were at. U.S. airstrikes carried out anywhere in the vicinity of suspected ISIS forces have tended to lead to large civilian casualties, as we just reported on. And while the U.S. has yet to comment on the latest incident, the Pentagon rarely acknowledges the full toll of airstrikes. Something, again, that's been proven many times over, just simply labeling these people enemy combatants just because they have refused to leave the war zone that was once their home. It's frustrating to see how this continues to be carried out. And now how 18 civilians being killed in the name of some long, never-ending war against some phantom enemy that we know has connections back to the Western powers themselves is just seeming 18 civilians just kind of go, oh, just that happens. It's just a casualty of war. Just how it goes. That's just kind of this blithe, casual attitude to civilians being killed on a regular basis, which I continue to say should not be the case. And we should not be allowing. People need to constantly speak up for any civilian that gets killed in the line of such an ongoing nonsensical war that seemingly has no end or really no end agenda other than trying to usurp Assad out of his seat of power in Syria. We recently talked about the Syrian analysis video, which very clearly showed the fact that the only reason which they claim to still be there fighting ISIS is just this one little pocket, which seems to be right inside U.S. territory, that they're just simply not addressing. As ISIS dances back and forth attacking Syrian forces, claiming Syria, clearly the United States is doing nothing about that last pocket of ISIS. He makes the clear point that if they were to do something about it, they would lose their reason for being there. And it would be very clear that the only reason they're there is to continue to fight Assad. The premise of being there to fight some kind of phantom ISIS enemy would no longer be there. And that's why they allow it to remain. But we've also pointed out in the past that there very clearly are associations to their creation in the first place with Western powers. But it's just this kind of thing has to appall us every time we see it. 18 random people killed in their own homes trying to flee the war created by the United States government. It's pretty frustrating. Moving on to the next story coming from theantimedia.com, the U.S. just helped bomb a Doctors Without Borders cholera clinic in Yemen. After the international humanitarian organization Doctors Without Borders announced that a newly constructed cholera treatment center in Yemen was bombed on Monday, Senator Chris Murphy, who has led the fight in the U.S. Senate to end the U.S. military's key role in assisting Saudi Arabia's assault on its war-torn and poverty-stricken neighbor, lashed out in disgust and anger on social media. Now, it's important to understand that if the political power, seat of power in the United States was different and possibly a Democrat, he'd likely not be saying anything. It's important to understand how that dynamic plays out. Luckily, the clinic was empty at the time and no patients or medical personnel were injured or killed in the attack, but the building, which was clearly marked on the roof as a healthcare facility, is now completely non-functional and operations have now been suspended in the area. The head of Doctors Without Borders mission in Yemen said, quote, "This morning's attack on a cholera treatment center by the Saudi-led coalition shows complete disrespect for medical facilities and patients. Whether intentional or a result of negligence, it is totally unacceptable. The compound was clearly marked as a health facility and its coordinates were shared with the Saudi coalition. With only half of health facilities in Yemen fully functional, nearly 10 million people in acute need, and an anticipated outbreak of cholera, the cholera treatment center had been built to save lives. Doctors Without Borders has temporarily frozen its activities in the area until the safety of its staff and patients is guaranteed." Now, my personal opinion, I think this was very much deliberate, as their past actions have clearly shown. The point is to intensify the cholera outbreak and make the situation increasingly more dangerous and hostile for the Yemeni people. That's the entire point of what's happening. Very similar to what we're seeing take place in Gaza. It's very frustrating to see this continue, and even more so when you realize, as we've shown many times in the past, that the United States is intricately involved in what's going on there, planning the bombings, even pointing to areas on a map, continuing to fund them and give them missiles and bombs. I mean, it's ongoing and wildly hypocritical as we see this continue to be carried out. More things we need to continue to talk about, continue to call out, as the United States points at other countries claiming their human rights abuses. Moving on to the next story, and the final story of the day, coming from the freethoughtproject.com, chilling NCMEC report shows 88% of missing sex trafficked kids come from U.S. foster care. In 2017, NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, assisted law enforcement with over 27,000 cases of missing children, the majority who were considered endangered runaways. According to their most recent report compiled from FBI data and their own, of nearly 25,000 runaways reported to NCMEC in 2017, one in seven were likely victims of child sex trafficking. Of those, 88% were in the care of social services when they went missing. Other governmental organizations have corroborated this horrifying trend. In a 2013 FBI 70-city nationwide raid, 60% of the victims came from foster care or group homes. In 2014, New York authorities estimated that 85% of sex trafficking victims were previously in the child welfare system. In 2012, Connecticut police rescued 88 children from sex trafficking. 86 were from the child welfare system. Now, whether or not one wants to make this about the very system meant to protect these kids, actually funneling them into these situations, which there's a lot of evidence to suggest, one thing is abundantly clear here. The claim that taking kids into state custody is a way of protecting them or will somehow better their lives is patently false, especially when we are dealing with cases of medical kidnapping, such as cannabis use or refusal to administer vaccines or chemotherapy, etc. Keith Strope, founder of National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, told the Daily Chronic that his team gets calls three or four times a week from people who have lost custody of their children because they tested positive for cannabis at birth or in a situation where parents were feuding over custody. This kidnapping even occurs in regions where marijuana is legal. Now think about that. They're putting these kids in these situations where we just talked about these statistics are that high because they disagree with the cannabis aspect, which is just infuriating. As the author notes, it should be noted that there are certainly instances of abusive parents who should not have custody of their children. There are also many kinds of loving foster parents willing to take them. However, as the recent case in Minnesota highlights, many times these children are torn from loving families and homes and forced into a system rife with abuse and trafficking. One terrifying example of kids being unnecessarily taken from their parents by the state, only to be severely harmed in government custody, comes out of Arizona. The state kidnapped a 5-year-old girl from her mother, who had an alleged substance abuse problem, and put her directly in the hands of a leader of a child sex ring. Even after the girl's mother recovered from her addiction, the state refused to return her daughter. Even worse, the mother found out that her daughter was being repeatedly sexually abused and no action was taken to remove her daughter from the state system. Equally as disturbing as the fact that most sex trafficked kids come from within the system itself is the fact that the FBI discovered in a 2014 nationwide raid that many foster children rescued from sex traffickers, including children as young as 11 years old, were never even reported missing by the child welfare authorities. Last year, the Free Thought Project reported on an example of this lack of reporting out of Topeka, Kansas. In the shocking report, the Kansas Department for Children and Families, the DCF, which oversees foster care in the state, like a CPS in California, were found to have lost 70 children after a high-profile case of three missing sisters garnered the attention of authorities. So we need to really stand back and think about what's going on here. Not only are these kids basically being funneled in trafficking. I mean, like I said, you could make the argument that the fact that they're in the system means they're already in a kind of a precarious situation, so they're simply more likely to end up in these situations. But I think the statistics are pretty clear here. And the simple fact that they're not even being reported when they go missing, I would say it seems very likely that there's something suspicious going on behind the scenes here. And these kids are seemingly being funneled right into this very dangerous situation. And again, we've seen immigrant children go missing, over 1,500 of them, all these different stories that lead us to believe that there's much more going on behind the scenes here, at the very least, worthy of investigation. Now, I want to end today by noting on the Tucson story, as I was one of the earlier ones to begin reporting on that, and the story, I've refrained from continuing to follow up on the story for a very specific reason. Now, ultimately, in the beginning, with the information that we had at hand, it seemed very likely that it was at very least worth investigating. But since then, there's been a lot of misinformation, a lot of disinformation, and clearly we've seen Craig Sawyer disagree with the Veterans on Patrol, and now all these weird, suspicious stories coming out about the leader of Veterans on Patrol, and all these different things coming out that really make it almost impossible to report on. We don't know what's true. We don't know who's being lied to. We don't know who's, you know, just in general, the idea of this entire case seems very suspicious to me, which does not mean it's not true. I mean, honestly, my gut instinct tells me that there's something really going on there, and that whether the whole ploy was to use something real in order to discredit the entire concept, or whether this guy from the Veterans on Patrol is basically being hung out to dry and used in order to make it all look crazy, I don't know. But the point is that we don't know. But at the end of the day, that story in general reeks of some kind of manipulation. And we have to be very, very careful about that. But ultimately, that's the hardest part about the times we live in today. The real villains of the world, more than likely in a position of power, work constantly to manipulate your perception. They think 10 moves ahead, as far as I can see, in order to make you doubt the obvious before it's ever even presented. Child trafficking is a perfect example of this. This is the real epidemic today, and all the numbers are there. And it's truly frightening when you realize just how serious this is. As far as I can tell, I've compiled a lot of information here, and I'm sure these things fluctuate year to year. But as of right now, every two minutes, a child is exploited in the sex industry. According to the USA Today, adults purchase children for sex at least 2.5 million times a year in the United States. 300,000 children in the United States are victims of child sex trafficking every single year. In addition, it's estimated that there are 100,000 to 150,000 underage children sex workers in the United States. Now, these girls aren't volunteering to be sex slaves. They're being lured in, and in most cases really have no choice. This is a highly profitable, highly organized, and highly sophisticated sex trafficking business that we're seeing take place within the United States, raking in upwards of $9.5 billion a year in the U.S. alone. The child sex trafficking industry reportedly makes more money than the NFL. 2 million children in the world are victims of child sex trafficking each and every year. Now think about all that. Think about that kind of information and ask yourself why this is not getting covered by the mainstream media. Now, events like Tucson, whether designed or not, are used to make you doubt the topic of child sex trafficking altogether. Like it's some kind of internet conspiracy theory. And all the mainstream media channels and all the elite push that mocking, dismissive narrative. And all the facts that they no doubt have access to, the ones I just listed off, and they're very aware of, and yet they still act like the topic is not worth discussing. The mainstream media never even addresses the topic in depth, only ever saying the words when they're forced into it, when cases like Nexium, yet make sure other aspects take the focus, even while that is the true story being obfuscated. And that should truly scare you and reveal the real monster in the shadows. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.